It's time now for Tiger Talk Overtime.
We should embrace playing the gold standard of this conference right now. You should welcome that. You should want that. You should want that experience. It should burn within you to say, I want that opportunity.
Nobody split. Give the ball up and over and in. I believe. Hit behind the line of scrimmage. Everybody knew what was coming. Alabama knew what was coming. Bo Jackson, just on sheer effort, got it in.
Out of shotgun, Patrick Nix. Alabama bringing everybody. Nix is going to float one for Sanders. Sanders, oh, he caught it at the two, and he dived in. Touchdown, Auburn! Touchdown, Auburn! Oh, my goodness!
Carnell Williams at the tailback. They'll hand it off to Williams up the middle. 25, cuts it inside. 30, 35, 40. There goes Cadillac. To the 50, to the 40, to the 30, to the 20, to the 15, 10. Go crazy, Cadillac. Go crazy. Touchdown. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Road, home, dirt, grass, it don't matter. Just give us that opportunity. That's the fire that is within us.
First down and 10, just inside of midfield. Here's Cam on the fake, right up the middle, breaks a tackle at the 40, stays on his feet, 35-30, 25-20. Peterson, the one man to beat at the 5. He is in! Touchdown, Auburn! Flash that smile, Cam.
Byron waits for the snap into place. There it is. The kick is up. The kick is good! Auburn wins! 22-19!
Tiger Talk Overtime is presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now at 343-0106. Now, here's your host, Doug Holton.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome into the show. Tiger Talk Overtime here on a Thursday night. Glad you're with us as we head into the oldest rivalry in the Deep South, Auburn and Georgia. Do the Tigers have a chance? That's a legitimate question this year, and we're going to talk about it. This is not the PR show. This is the realist show, and we'll talk about all facets of the rivalry tonight. As the Tigers are currently about a 24.5-point underdog to the Georgia Bulldogs. And also, Georgia has scheduled Auburn as their homecoming game in 2024. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Kevin Fichtner, Brian Brensfield, former Auburn Tiger, and Stu Donald coming up in just a couple of minutes. And at the bottom of the hour on the Horizon Financial Halftime Report, Coach Fred Riley is with us to talk Auburn and Georgia, reminisce a little bit, get his thoughts on last week and the game coming this week against the Dogs. Okay, the big news, though, this week for the Auburn Tigers, and a little bit of odd timing on this, not sure why it happened when it did, but I can speculate a little bit. Deuce Knight, the quarterback, 4-star, 5-star, whatever you want to rank him, that was committed to Notre Dame, has now officially flipped his commitment. He's been visiting Auburn for 3 or 4 weeks, and he has flipped his commitment to the Auburn Tigers. And so that is a big get. Recruiting continues to go well for the Auburn Tigers, although they're not getting the results of that recruiting quite yet, at least not in the wins and losses column. So Hugh Freeze with a big get at quarterback. What does that mean for Walker White? Not sure. What does that mean for Hank Brown? Not sure. But Deuce Knight is in, apparently, as a quarterback. We'll see if he sticks around. I think he will. But he is in as a commitment for the Auburn Tigers in the next class of 2025. And here is what Deuce had to say this week about his flip to Auburn.
And then it's just the SEC. Like I said, it means more. You're playing against the best every week. So you're playing against the best in practice. So that's just going to prepare you for the next level. I told Coach Freeze yesterday, he was hyped. You know, he's been saying all my recruitment, he needs a trigger man. And He's like, he can get the trigger, man. You know, Auburn can do some special things because I know he's rebuilding, and he'll tell you to yourself, they're not complete right now. But he get the trigger, man, and some more pieces around, he feel like he can go in and beat Bama and beat Georgia and teams like that.
All right, here to talk about how the Deuce got loose from Notre Dame and wound up at Auburn, Kevin Fichtner, Mr. Auburn, Brian Brinsfield, former Auburn Tiger and long snapper from Spanish Fort and Fairhope football, and Stu Donald is with us as well. Stu, I know you have a recipe for us later for the weekend, but what do you think? You've seen Deuce play a little bit. What was the recipe for Auburn to get him?
Honestly, anybody that's been to Lousdale, Mississippi, and spent any time there should know that a young man from there is not going to be comfortable in South Bend, Indiana. It's just a different environment. Lousdale is really small town. It's 20 minutes from where I live in Sims. So, and Sims is a lot of people in Lousdale consider going to the Walmart in Sims as going to town.
Yeah.
Or even they'll even call it going to Mobile, just driving across the state line to Sims.
So you don't think there was an additional offer to Deuce? This seems like odd timing to me.
There may have been, but I mean, all you've got to do is go from Mobile to South Bend one time. And when you get back from that trip, you're going to be like, man, that was a lot of time spent in an airport. Or worse, if you drive it, well, that was a, you know, 18-hour drive one way. I've driven Chicago to Pace, Florida before. It was about 17 or 18 hours.
Yeah.
South Bend is not far outside of Chicago.
I was going to say I made that plane trip to Chicago and then over to South Bend. But, Brian, you asked me last night, I think, was it official? And I'm not sure what the answer to that is because I'm not sure what official is today in college football. But you've been doing some film study, I know, on the Auburn Tigers. And I had the courage to watch the first quarter last night from last week again. And I saw about three opportunities there, major opportunities, I'll call them, that the other team could have picked off Peyton Thorne in the first quarter. So tell me what you see when you look at that film.
Yeah, I mean, I broke down, and I won't go into detail without a – it would be great if we could have a telestrator and I could pretend like I was an analyst.
John Madden.
On game day, John Madden. but we don't. So I broke down the third to last and second to last series that we had. And basically my conclusion was – that there were mistakes on both sides, on the head coach and on Peyton. The third to last series, we started at 10:59. We had the ball at 10:59, and the first play out of the gate, he almost threw an interception to Billy Bowman, the safety on a deep slant. He had Cam Coleman wide open in the flat, running a little shallow route. But then it just got worse. I think that's the one where he and KSL were and Lewis were on different pages. Peyton threw a hitch. Lewis kept running the sideline. So they were on different pages. And then, you know, they got into this third and 10, and he and Coach Freeze were going back and forth kind of angrily at each other. But we only took – it looks like 37 or 38 seconds off the clock, gave them the ball. They threw the ball down the field, scored. And then we get the ball back with 8:32. And we did a pretty good job of getting the ball down, getting the clock down until third and four. And here's where, and again, I could go into the details of what I saw and what makes sense and what doesn't. But the third and four is where I struggle with putting in. Doug, you made a comment. He's a fifth-year senior. Should he be able to get out of that situation? Yes. But Coach Freeze put Peyton in a situation on third and four with – we snapped the ball with 4 minutes and 14 seconds to go, but he put him in empty. No backs, and against one of the best defensive play callers in the last 25 years. And what Venerables did was he put six on the line. So we've got empty. We've got five wide receivers. They're playing cover zero or man to man in the secondary, and put six on the line. We've got five offensive linemen, Peyton and a back. I'm sorry, we don't have a back. We just got Peyton back there, so no blocker for the sixth man. But then Venerables does something that I hadn't seen in a long time. He drops four of those six linemen right in the middle of the field, and that's exactly where Peyton tries to dump the ball. We run basically double slants. They were actually little posts, and the guy that he was trying to throw to beat his man off the ball. If Peyton puts a little air under it, it's touchdown. Yeah. However, here's what we had on the wide side of the field. We had trips to the wide side of the field. We had doubles to the short side of the field, to the boundary. And on the wide side of the field, when you have empty, you're going to have a safety valve. And you can – people call it all kind of things. But we had the slot receiver ran one of those safety routes. And he just basically backs up, and it's a hot route. And Peyton should have saw that, thrown it right now to him as a hot route. Or – Coach Free should have called timeout. So those two, a combination of those things happened. And, you know, I think my comment to you was something to the point of they should have known better and Auburn deserves better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true.
And I think, as I've said many times by now, I think the running back turnover problem is pretty much solved, I think. And the turnovers we're making – are the ones from the quarterback that are decision-making turnovers. Kevin, tell me a little bit about the feeling, the logistics of this one. Going to Athens, we haven't won there a lot lately. We started out as a 23.5 point underdog, and it's going up. It's 24.5, so they're trying to get people to bet on Auburn. And it's homecoming for the Georgia Bulldogs, right?
Yeah. That's correct. We're going between the edges, and then we're their homecoming their opponent. That's how bad it is right now. I know it just happened to fall that way, but yeah, it could get ugly. They're coming off that Bama loss. They're not going to be, you know, too happy to see us. They want to punish us. We haven't won there since 2005 on the road. I noticed on my Facebook feed today, exactly 3 years ago today, we ended the streak at LSU. Only reason why I noticed that because I smoked a cigar that night because it had been since 99 since we had done that. So it's been a long time. But back to Stu's point about Deuce going to South Bend, it's not even wintertime yet. I couldn't imagine being there when it's cold and being from where he is. He's not going to like that. So I know he's been at these games the last few weeks, and I guess he either Hugh got a hold of him and said, look, we really need you. Here's a little extra NIL money. Or he just wanted to be a little bit closer to home. So we'll find out in the long run what that was. But we're happy about that. But this weekend, it could get ugly. I mean, Vegas already has it, like you said, 24-point dogs. It's not going to end well, I don't think.
More conversation on Tiger Talk Overtime in just a minute. Stay right here. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Tiger Talk Overtime, presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now, 343-0106. Now, back to Doug Holton.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Talking some Auburn, Georgia football, and Tigers a 24-point underdog this weekend. Glad you're with us on Tiger Talk Overtime to preview it just a little bit. Brian Brinsfield, former Auburn Tiger, is with us. Kevin Fichtner from Auburn. And Stu Donald also with us. And Stu, we got a little bit of Kevin's take on this rivalry before the break. Tell us a little bit about what you're thinking as Hugh Freeze and the crew head toward Athens this weekend.
Prayer, lots of prayer. And it's, I don't, and you know, maybe Georgia's not what Georgia was with Kentucky taking them down the line, Alabama jumping out on them so quickly. Maybe this just isn't Kirby's year. And hopefully, and if it's certainly not our year either. I don't know. I'm struggling to have much hope.
Agreed.
Yeah, and the Georgia quarterback struggled a little bit in the first half last week, Brian. And they obviously adjusted well at halftime against Alabama and maybe grew up a little bit in the second half. What do you see in Georgia this year? I know you had a chance to watch some of that game at least.
Yeah, I watched all of it. In fact, my girlfriend even said, hey, they gave him too much time at the end. And I went, oh, okay. She knows what's going on. But it's Georgia and it's a tough place to play. I played there twice and it's a really loud place. It's a hostile place. They come in for football and they love it just like we do here at Auburn. I'll say this, Kirby Smart is probably as good as it gets, is probably up there with any coach as far as making halftime adjustments. And Lisa also said, okay, it's 28-0 or 32-0 or whatever it was at halftime. Can we watch something else? But I said, no, Kirby Smart's going to make adjustments, and he did. And that's exactly what he saw. And so I think he'll be ready. They might start out slow. I saw a side-to-side comparison of, believe it or not, Peyton Thorne and Carson Beck yesterday, and Peyton Thorne's his stats are right up there with the number one draft, projected draft quarterback in the country. You saw it too, Kevin, I guess. You're nodding a lot. So, Beck has struggled, and their defense, they didn't give up a touchdown until the 17th quarter of the season. But when they did, boy, they gave it up. And, we don't have a Jalen Milroe, if you look at our stats compared to our opponent's stats, the only place we are lacking or we are less than is turnovers, period, end of sentence, passing, rushing, first down, second down, third down, fourth downs. We're winning the battles except on turnovers, and that's what's killing us in for the season.
Yeah. Interesting contrast there. The stats are there for Peyton, Kevin, but the stats also are there for the turnovers and the possible turnovers. I know Oklahoma was a pretty good defense, but I think Georgia's probably a step up, maybe, and Alabama certainly would be a step up.
We talked about this last week with a game like this, especially being on the road, our first road game. I think we need to run the ball more, try to establish that run. We should have ended the game against Oklahoma, continuing to run that game, to run the clock, make that game smaller. Like Brian said, if you put up two faces, two quarterbacks, and you wouldn't know the difference. As Brian knows, that the stats are there. It's just the turnovers, the fumbles, which hopefully we've corrected. But going on the road, you got to establish a run, whether – you force feed it. You just got to try to do something you haven't been able to do a whole game yet.
Yeah, and Stu, I know you're an offensive line guy, so you would agree with that. And maybe the defense needs to help out early and get us a little hope over in Athens this weekend.
Well, we seem to be having a whole lot of self-inflicted wounds. That's a discipline issue. Penalties at the absolute worst time. But it starts at the top. Coaching decisions. If you've got Jarquez Hunter as your running back and you decide to go for it on fourth and goal from the one, why do you put a 180-pound wide receiver in the backfield and put the ball in his hands?
Yeah.
I'm an O-lineman. I want to block for a guy that knows how to get that yard.
Yeah, that was an interesting scenario down there. I think, Brian, when they put Sam Jackson in there for a couple times, tried a couple of different things on the goal line. I actually, in that drive, I think it was that drive, when they got down to the 1 yard line or whatever, I thought probably we should have taken the points at that time in the game, because we had driven all the way down the field, and to come away empty was a big blow.
Yeah. And anytime you put a guy that's not used to taking snaps 50 times, 60 times a day in practice, and throw him in with gloves and in an environment that he's got to catch the snap and then do what he's got to do. Unless you're the real Deuce, which was number two back in 1992 or 93, it's probably not a great idea. Let a guy who's used to catching the snap take the snap, and then like Stewart says, let your bigs do their job. If you can't get 2 or 3 yards in the SEC, then you're doing something wrong. But I want to give props to our defense too. All the takeaways aside, You know, some of these stats, the offensive yards, we're outgaining people by 700 yards, points by 70 points, passing yards by 500, rushing yards by almost 300. So even with the takeaways, our defense has done a pretty daggum good job of coming on the field and really not giving away that much. So again, going back to takeovers, but yeah, the goal line, I think you just, you put it in Jacquez Hunter's hands or Zero's hands or whoever's and you pound it.
Yeah. And speaking of the defense, Stuart, we had a couple of guys last weekend who I think are coming on and will play another good game this week, like Riddick. Some of those young guys are starting to get in the lineup and get some reps and make some big plays for Auburn.
Yeah, that's good. Riddick was out there being really athletic. I never had that kind of ability. But he was getting all over the field, putting pressure on the quarterback without it being like a true blitz situation, more like just flaring out the edge to see what's going on and then deciding he's going to track the quarterback down and catch it up to it. That athleticism is just amazing. So when you put some experience with it, I could see us having just one heck of a linebacker for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin, I know the guys are practicing in the indoor this week and got a little noise going in there. what kind of atmosphere do you expect over in Athens? Are the Bulldog fans, are they've got homecoming. Are they going to leave it at halftime, or will it be noisy, or what?
I doubt they'll leave at halftime because it's a great rivalry, oldest rivalry in the South. But those dogs will be barking. Those people will be barking and being obnoxious, but that's part of the SEC, you know. It's going to be loud. It's going to be crazy. It's their homecoming. They're going to have their queen out there at halftime, and their governor, I guess, will be out there like we do with Meemaw here. Yep. But it's going to be a good time for them, I think. As much as I love Auburn, I don't see much hope. I like Stu said, you got to pray for something good, but there's not much good out there. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, Stu, I know one good positive about the weekend always is your recipe for tailgating. Give us a little hope and a little good food for this weekend. What are we looking at?
I got a couple of different condiment ideas. If the guys don't know, you do. I always like to a certain extent, pay homage to whoever our opponent is by using part of their culture in my recipes and stuff. Well, this one's two different condiments. One of them is an onion marmalade, and the other one is a barbecue sauce. The onion marmalade I want to make with Coca-Cola from right there in Atlanta. Coca-Cola. And you just take your onions, and you cook them down with some Coca-Cola, a little salt, a little pepper, a little garlic, until it's, you know, looks like marmalade. And then the other one is make a peach barbecue sauce by getting some peaches and puree in them, mixing them into a barbecue sauce, or if you make a scratch barbecue sauce, build it up with the peaches. And then you can put that on burgers, you can put it on barbecue, you can put it on hot dogs, which I've used both of those before on a dog that I themed for an Auburn-Georgia game that I called the Georgia dog, but it was Kaneka sausage wrapped with Kaneka bacon, Georgia deep fried. And then we added the Coca-Cola onion marmalade and the Georgia peach barbecue sauce to it. So both teams are represented in one delicious sandwich.
Wow. That was a lot.
Good Lord.
Where are you at, Stu? Where are you going to be on Saturday?
Saturday, I'll actually be working.
When you use condiments and go into a Georgia flavor, all I could think about was going to Kroger and buying a box of milk bones. That's all I could think of.
That'll work, too. All right, guys. Appreciate you being with us today, and good luck to the Tigers Saturday. Hopefully we can come away with a big victory somehow, some way, get some turnovers or some help over there and pull this one out. War Eagle.
War Eagle.
All right, Brian Brensfield, Stu Donald, Kevin Fichtner on the Auburn Tigers and Georgia Bulldogs. And we'll be back with Coach Fred Riley on the Horizon Financial Halftime Report after a short timeout. Stay right here.
This is Head Coach Hugh Freeze. You're listening to Tiger Talk Overtime on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Tiger Talk Overtime, presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now, 343-0106. Now, back to Doug Holton.
And welcome back to the Horizon Financial Halftime Report here on Tiger Talk Overtime. Glad you're with us on a Thursday night, and we want to welcome to the microphones Coach Fred Riley, who was a graduate assistant in 1982 for Coach Pat Dye, and went through some great times there, and pretty good Georgia game, although we didn't pull out the victory. But, Coach, welcome to the show, and War Eagle.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Auburn, Georgia, a lot of ties, cross ties there with Coach Dooley, Coach Jordan from back in the day, and, always a hard-nosed football game.
Yeah. How's your book doing? I know your audio version's doing good, but what about the book? Still going?
Oh, I don't know. I guess. I mean, you know, I ain't added on to my house or anything from the sales, but I run into guys every now and then who will say, "Hey, I read your book and really enjoyed it." Or listened to your book, and it was more fun for me than anything. I didn't do it to
become a millionaire,
to make a dollar. No, I mean that was all
or
about
multi-millionaire, I should say.
Yeah, it would have doubled my net worth if we'd done that, probably. Thanks to Susan.
Yeah. Well, for those people who are watching us, Lionel James over my right shoulder or left shoulder, whichever way you're looking there. But one of my favorite memories of the Auburn-Georgia game in 1982, I know you were there that year. And to that point, and maybe a little bit after that, were the two upper decks there then or just one?
I think just one.
Yeah, I think so too. I was going to say that to that point, and probably a year or two after that, was the loudest I had heard Jordan-Hare Stadium on Lionel's, I think, 87-yard run.
Right. Yeah. And again, heck of a football game. And again, and you start looking at the things that you know, besides having Bo Jackson come in 82, but the things that Coach Dye did as a head coach and that everybody bought into is, you know, he taught them how to win the games they were supposed to win. And they started doing that, and to how not to lose games and to not turn the ball over, not make a critical error, that it's okay to punt the ball. A punt's a positive play. How to make quality decisions. I mean, again, the number one thing was always, and people that came out through that family, number one, do not turn the ball over. Yeah. Win the turnover battle. Besides being physical and tough and hard nosed and all those things that people that come out of that school became and coached that way, and find a way to he would have the offense coordinator, for instance, call the game to play to the defense, which is a lot. If you have defensive head coaches there, you remember Coach Dow back in the day, right? Jack's ear all the time. I mean, Lord have mercy. A lot of the great programs that have defensive head coaches, they make that offense coordinator, they constantly remind them, call the game to help the defense. Don't put the defense in a bad position. Mm-hmm. And which will tend to make games closer, make games shorter, and give you a chance to beat people that maybe you aren't supposed to win. So all full circle back to what we're talking about. You know, we're in that game, down, in the fourth quarter, 13-7 or, something like that. And right. We run the triple option to the right. And Randy actually misses the read. He pitches the ball off the wrong guy, and so he pitches the ball out in space. But Lionel sticks his foot in the ground, makes the guy that Randy's supposed to be pitching the ball off I'll miss, and hits his head on the goalpost, and puts us up 14-13. And And it was pretty loud in the building at that moment. Obviously, you know, Herschel and that bunch took it down the field, got a touchdown, and we ended up back inside the 20 trying to win the game at the end, and got it in position down there and had a chance. So that last 5 minutes was really something. A lot of things went on during that little window of time.
Yeah, the Georgia game, outstanding game. Auburn could have easily won that one in 82, and the Alabama game, of course, is history. They go on to win that one at the end of the season. And you had, who'd you have that year? Florida State and Georgia and Alabama at the end of the year or something, and Tennessee thrown in there somewhere?
Well, yeah, of course, you finished the Alabama game and went and played Boston College in the then Tangerine Bowl.
Yeah, Doug Flutie. Doug Flutie.
Mm-hmm. You've got Bo Jackson. Think about the people that you play in that window. You've got Bo Jackson on your team. You play against Herschel Walker in that little window right there. You play against Doug Flutie, and you coach against Paul Bryant in his last regular season game. So there's a lot of history in a month right there a 22-year-old like myself was ignorant to really at the time, and you look back on it and go, holy cow, that was actually really cool.
I want to take a minute to tell you about Henry Hardy and Horizon Financial, a company built on knowledge, personal service, and integrity. Henry Hardy has over 32 years in financial services. Henry Hardy is a SmartVestor pro utilizing Dave Ramsey's investing principles, and that tells me a lot. If you're looking for wealth management, retirement planning, call Henry Hardy and Horizon Financial, 251-625-2220, located across from the Eastern Shore Center at 1 Timber Way, Suite 100 in Daphne, Alabama. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Sage Point Financial Incorporated, SPF, member FINRA, SIPC. Working with an advisor who subscribes to the SmartVestor Pro Network cannot guarantee investment success or that financial goals will be achieved. Advisors pay a fee to belong to the SmartVestor Pro program. Dave Ramsey and the Dave Ramsey SmartVestor Pro program are not affiliated with Sage Point Financial Incorporated and are not sponsored or endorsed by Sage Point Financial Incorporated. And back here on the Horizon Financial Halftime Report, visiting with Coach Fred Riley. I'm Doug Holton. Glad you're with us on Tiger Talk Overtime tonight. And, Coach, we were talking about winning the games you're supposed to win and turnovers a little bit before the break. And I had the courage to go back and watch the Auburn-Oklahoma game a little bit this week. I got through the first quarter and noticed that maybe in the first quarter we could have had three interceptions, and two of them pretty easily could have gone for pick sixes. So, and I was also thinking if we were against a defense, maybe a notch above Oklahoma, like Georgia or Alabama, the interception level might've gone up to four or five, maybe even six last week. What did you think of that ball game?
Well, and somebody had asked me about the game beforehand, and I said, well, a friend of mine at the golf course who's an Auburn guy, and he said, you know, what do you think? And I said, well, Oklahoma's limping in here now. Yeah. Their wideout crew is decimated. They're going with a true freshman quarterback, first game on the road in this environment. It is going to be tough on them. And I said, you know, they'll play it close to the vest. They'll protect the kid, and they will see if we blink. And we blinked. You know, and you were hoping that they would be the one that would blink, that you'd put them in that position where their quarterback is going to have to make a play to bring them from behind and him not be able to do it. And you find a way to win the game. And, and the shoe just, ended up on the other foot. And, like we talked about a minute ago, they called the game to protect the defense and protect the young quarterback, and let's just see if we can hang around and see if Auburn will blink. Will they turn it over? Will they do something and give us a chance, maybe even give us the game if we just hang around long enough? You know, something that doesn't get talked about a lot, but I didn't see a lot of conversation about it because I know in today's modern kicking, you're kicking field goals off them all over the place now, but I really believe, and this is not hindsight. I'm talking to somebody watching the game, and we had the ball at the 38, up 21-10. I told the person I was watching the game with, I would punt it right here. This you get a young kicker, so you're gonna give it to him out here at the 38. Punt the ball inside the five. They have a freshman quarterback. Make them drive it 95 yards. It's in the student section down there. Put them down there with all that going on top of them and see if they can drive it 95 yards. Yeah. And if they can, it burns a lot of clock and you're going to be okay. But we didn't. They get it at the 38. They make a quick play. They score really fast. And next thing you know, it's pick six and the whole thing's turned on you. So, you know, again, a Pat Dye would have punted the ball right there. Mm-hmm. And they'd have been booing him. And he wouldn't have cared. You know, he wouldn't have cared. He'd have punted the ball from the 38 and said, you know what, make them drive it. And let's see if they can beat us.
Yeah. And I thought about what you said about the field goal. Towns was struggling Saturday kicking a little bit. End of the first half, he missed a couple. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, why don't they put Alex McPherson in there? He was cleared for the game and let him kick since he didn't miss one last year. But I thought they should have maybe kicked a field goal in the first quarter too, down there on the goal line instead of going for it. But
yeah, you know, the team that scores the most points still wins. Points do count.
Most of the time.
The same points, and those 3 points count as three in the first quarter, the same amount as they do in the fourth quarter. And you know, I watched Davidson High School that couple of weeks ago, and they end up losing a game on the last play of the game, get a field goal blocked and run back for a touchdown. But they chose not to try to kick a field goal in the first half on fourth and goal from the 8. Well, you know how hard it is to score from the 8-yard line?
Percentages are against you there.
Yeah, exactly. If you kick the field goal right there at the end of the game, you're kneeling it out. You don't have to try to kick a field goal that gets blocked. Almost bad things don't happen. So if you make the field goal, obviously.
Yeah. I had the feeling Saturday, too, sitting in the stadium. I don't know why this just crossed my mind that I think it was 7-0 only at the time, or maybe it was more. But I just was sitting there thinking, you know, nobody fears Auburn anymore, like in the 80s or, you know, in the early 2000s or whatever the time periods have been, or before that with Coach Jordan. What do you think?
You know, I mean, there was a again, we've been in the national finals and won a national championship in since that window of time and been in that elite group of people that have done that, you know, in the 21st century. It's just, you know, it is the difference is it is so hard to stay there. It is unbelievably hard to stay at that level every year, year in and year out, and be what Alabama has done. I mean, again, let's talk about Nebraska. I mean, when Nebraska fired Frank Solich, they ain't been back since. Because winning 9 games wasn't good enough for the Nebraska people, or winning 9 and 10, it wasn't good enough. So they fired Frank, and it never, you know, how Texas disappeared for a while. I mean, they just vanished for a good while. Tennessee has been through their struggles and disappeared for a while, and they've worked their way back.
Florida's going through the same thing.
Florida's in that same boat. You know, you didn't get as good as Georgia is. You tend to forget that Georgia has been good in this window of time, with Tennessee at their worst, Florida at their worst, Auburn not playing very well, and then playing SEC East schedule over the, and so basically having a, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 games that they could win just by rolling out there and lining up and playing. And that keeps you healthy. That keeps you good, you know, allows you to be built for a 13-game schedule. And, so timing is everything, too. When you're good.
A little more with Coach Fred Riley coming up. Final segment on Tiger Talk Overtime in just a minute. Stay right here. We'll be back in just a minute.
Welcome back to Tiger Talk Overtime, presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now, 343-0106. Now, back to Doug Holton.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Visiting with Fred Riley, Coach Fred Riley, about the Auburn-Georgia game coming up this weekend. Glad you're with us here for the conversation. And, Coach, we talked a little bit earlier with our crew about something that so many people have mentioned this year, and that is running the football a little bit more with our struggles in the passing game. Although we're making some explosive plays in the passing game, but also some mistakes, but maybe mixing in a little bit more run, running that clock, and that's certainly something that a lot of people have noticed about last week's game versus Oklahoma.
At 21-10, Jarquez had made two really good plays, one running the ball and one catching a ball out of the backfield, back-to-back first downs, and then he tapped out because he was tired. Yeah. So they go in with the backup, and they run two RPOs in a row, and he pulls them and throws the ball both times.
Yeah.
Both incompletions. You know, this led to the missed 55-yard field goal. Where, you know, we're not quite in the red zone, but we're on the plus side of the 50.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got to have, again, to me, that's that time where you're up 21-10 and you've got a kid who has turned the ball over a bunch. You know, don't put him in a bad position right here. You know, but whatever, let's say that the play that they had is called Texas. I mean, you tell him, but whatever formation, Texas, give the ball, Peyton.
Yeah.
You know.
In his helmet.
And he's listening to him. That's right. You ain't got to be yelling at it from the sideline like we have to do back in the day. You tell him, give the ball, Peyton.
Yeah.
When he did it the first time, surely don't put it on the kid to do it a second time. You can say, okay, the first time is on Thorne. You gave him too much credit and decision-making and awareness right there to what's going on right here. The second time, you tell him, and then you yell it at him. I mean, you know, especially if all of your run game has an RPO tied into it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think most of their running game does. So certainly this, you don't let it happen a second time.
Yeah.
You get so what is moving that second time. That was disappointing at that moment in time. Any good football person is yelling at their TV at that moment, what are you doing? You know, run the ball.
There were a lot.
The interception, give Oklahoma credit on the interception. And that they had them we were in a formation that empty, and they go and say, okay, they check to an all-out blitz. We're going to outnumber you one guy, and we're going to make you throw the ball hot. And we know where your hot throw is.
And the guy just
dropped
off.
The extra guy off the right. They bail the linebacker right into his hot throw, and he never sees it.
Yeah.
You know, because this is a clean window here. Every time I've thrown this in practice, this has been open. And it is open right here, as far as he could tell.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a great scheme by Oklahoma to basically bait us into a pick right there.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure the ball would have gotten to the receiver anyway, but we'll never know about that. But does that, I guess what we're talking about is what in the world were we thinking offensively? What was Coach Freeze thinking at that point? And why didn't he do that?
The only thing that I can think of at that moment in time, he didn't know if 21 is going to be enough to win the game.
Right.
That if we punt it to them right here, you know, I'm afraid they're going to score, and 20. We've got to at least score one more time now to win the game because the momentum shifted in the ball game, and I'm sure that we'll go spread. You'll empty it out. It'd be easier for him to see where everybody is. It's a nice simple look for him, nice simple throw. But then again, to give Oklahoma credit, not many people, you know, bring the house and play cover zero right there, you know, at that moment. You got to give them credit for saying, you know what, here we come, boys. And they did, and did a great job with their scheme.
Yeah. Kind of like Georgia trying to cover Ryan Williams on Saturday night on the last touchdown. You had a chance to watch that one. Of course, Georgia is the opponent this weekend in Athens, and Alabama ruled the first half. Georgia kind of ruled the second half. Did Kirby's team grow up a little bit in half number two there?
Well, and I'll go back to Ryan Williams. I mean, Georgia had no more success covering than Blunt or any other of the 6A's down here that have watched that kid grow up and heard about him since youth leagues.
Yeah.
I thought that Alabama in the first half offensively, they ran things that they had not run all year long. They've been prepping for Georgia for a while. They had other games that they felt like they could win in their base stuff and not be not throw a whole lot out there. So the first half, Alabama did some stuff, including empty formation that they haven't done all year long, mm-hmm. and ran some schemes that Georgia had not seen. Same thing on the other side of the ball. Defensively, Alabama had really been a base defense, bend but don't break scheme most, all season.
Yeah.
Just keep the ball in front of them. And then all of a sudden, the first half, they disguise a bunch. They bring stuff, that stuff that Georgia had not seen. But once Georgia saw it, they fixed it. Here's what they're doing. Here's where we go. And here's how we attack this stuff now. And so they, there's a reason those guys had won 42 regular season games in a row. They know what they're doing. And
pretty big difference. Carson, first half, second half.
Yeah, and Alabama had a series, that they threw the ball three times. That they, looking back on it, they probably wish they had run the ball three times in a window there that just to shorten the game a little bit, almost a little nonchalant with the possession. Then that it was holy cow. Folks, they're ahead now. What in the heck? What has just happened? So they just Alabama made one more play at the end of the deal than they did with the interception at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think Auburn, obviously going into Athens, emotionally flat, I would think, after what has happened the first part of the season. When we talked a second ago before we went on the air, you talked about toughness and what Auburn has to do this weekend just to go over there and play Auburn football.
Right. Well, and again, the I hate to get nostalgic, but that's what we do at our age. You have to go back to the Pat Dye talk about, those days are going to happen that you're going to lay your guts on the line and you're going to lose.
Yeah.
And there ain't nothing you can do but get up and go do it again and again and again and again. And you find out what kind of toughness you've got, what kind of grit you've got, what kind of man you are, what kind of team you're going to be. And this is one of those times. It'd be real easy just to go over there and, you said, play flat, waller around, and get your brains beat out. And Georgia would Georgia would love nothing more than to be so far ahead at halftime they could play some other guys in the second half, because they've been through some tough physical games early in the year between Alabama and Kentucky. Where they've got some guys beat up and banged up. So, they're not going to, if they get ahead, they're not going to take their foot off the pedal till it's where they want it to be. And if we waller around and don't play with a little grit and toughness, I'd be all for running the 40-second clock down to 1 second the entire game and shortening the game and just seeing if we can hang around a little bit longer and get, while you're trying to get your motors running and where you can, get to that second half where you, still smell it a little bit.
Yeah,
and then see what happens.
Well, we hope we get to that point Saturday, Georgia and Auburn. Thanks to Coach Fred Riley for being with us on the show this week and giving us his perspective. If you want to join us through the week for Auburn football, WarEagleTV.com. Our X page is @TV_WarEagle, @TV_WarEagle. That's about all the time we have for tonight. Enjoy the Deep South's oldest rivalry, everybody, right here on FM Talk 106.5. We'll see you next week on Tiger Talk Overtime. Until then, Doug Holton, War Eagle, everybody.